Hello and welcome to the A&F podcast with me, Al Coates.
Him. Me, Scott Casson Rennie.
And me, Sarah Anderson, founder of FosterWiki.
We are the serious anecdotes podcasts for the sector. Anyway,
it's taken us 10 minutes to get to this point. So it doesn't bode well for the rest of the hour, does it?
I tell you. I'm having one of those days. Before we came on, I banged my little finger. And I was like, literally tears down my face, my bad finger. Anyway. Okay. Today we've got a slightly a different episode because we've invited Sarah on because Sarah, who is from FosterWiki. Right. And
Only you.
Every time you say that, I'm going to do that. You know that.
Yeah, right. No song, and nothing.
And Sarah has has been working very diligently over the summer on a report, and we invited Sarah on to come on and share that with us and share that with our listener. So, Sarah, over to you, really.
Your mother.
Let's start from scratch. What is this report? Why have you done it? And what are we, you know, let's just get into it because my mind is addled.
Well, it's been screamingly obvious for quite a long time that the cost of living crisis has been, well, what can I say, terrifying a lot of foster carers. I think you'll find as well it's a sort of, it's the spearhead, if you like. It's the straw that's going to break the camel's back because foster care is already in crisis. We've already got a foster carer community in crisis. Retention's lower, recruitment's virtually non-existent at the moment. And, you know, there are no significant increases in allowances and skills fees for years and years. There's been I think it's 19 years since they changed the tax code for, you know, for foster carers. The cost of living started to terrify everybody, and we needed to know to what extent that was impacting on the foster carer community. And so we set about with sort of 10 very, very basic questions to find out how it was impacting on them.
I mean, it's obvious, isn't it? I mean, all the news items up until, I mean, this is the week between the death of the Queen and the funeral, so it's a bit of a different news agenda. But leading up to this, to that news, it's just consumed it's consumed the political sphere in relation to the leadership election. It's consumed, prior to that, it was bubbling along. Is that people getting in touch with you, foster carers getting in touch with you, sort of saying, look, nothing's happening, or I've been looking for additional support? What precipitated it? Was it carers, or was it just a good
idea? So obviously I reach out to thousands of carers each week through social media platforms, and that is our main, you know, way that we communicate. We don't have a database of foster carers, so we rely on word of mouth and we rely on social media. It's obviously working because I've just got the figures through from my IT guy, and in the last 30 days, 261,000 page requests went on to FosterWiki. So, you know, wow. I think, yeah, wow. So,
stop, right. Yeah. Okay, so what does that mean? Because that's quite technical. If people don't know what that means, is that people literally...
Every time someone looks at a page. Can be somebody going in there and looking at 10 pages. It can be somebody going back and looking at 20 pages, you know, it can be someone scrolling through anything. But the basic tenet of it is that, you know, 261,000 times in the last 30 days, someone's looked at a page on FosterWiki. And we, in, you know, the last 24 hours, have been 11,000 page requests. So, and it's gone up hugely since the cost of living crisis survey, since, you know, we've managed to sort of get the word out, and it's just exponentially sort of, you know, rolling downhill, gathering moss, as it were, through social media. So it's quite a tall order to get to all foster carers in the country, because, of course, being such a devolved community, their sort of access system is controlled by each local authority and agency. So we were really, really thrilled that over 1,000 foster carers came forward and filled in our survey, one of the largest of its kind, certainly one of the largest independent ones of its kind. And, you know...
Can you put that in context for us? I mean, approximately how many carers are approved in the UK?
Now you're asking me. So that first figure always varies depending who we're adding in. But, you know, I would say it's around 60,000 or something. So it isn't doesn't sound much in terms of the larger population. It really doesn't. But surveys are notoriously difficult to get people to fill in. I mean, if you think about the Fostering Network State of the Nation report, which is the biggest survey in the country for statistics, and they only usually get about 2,500 foster carers filling in. And you've got to remember they can access thousands and thousands more than us through email directly. Memberships.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think but, 1,000, you know, 1,000 is, I don't know about you, Scott, but I think 1,000 is a really good response. I mean,
yes.
I know enough about statistics to kind of go, yeah. Oh, that's representative. You know, if you've got 60,000 carers, then.
We're really thrilled with it that so many, but to be honest, we didn't have to try too hard. People were desperate to be heard and desperate to be heard independently. I think that really is important as well. We don't represent or work with or are contracted by anybody. These are carers who will trust in the independence of Foster Wiki and the anonymity and will come forward and fill these in. Because you have to remember, you know, foster carers work in very precarious working status. They are quite frightened of speaking out because of the systems that we work in. There's no hiding from that fact. And so for that many to come forward, we were absolutely delighted. We weren't so delighted with the results, but... we were thrilled with the uptake.
Yeah, and I was just going to add, that was my first question really, was about the results. And within the results, it says 54% of the respondents find themselves considering resigning due to the current cost of living crisis. I mean, that's a very big figure. But do you think that's also like compounded by the fact that they were thinking it anyway, and this is just like, this is just the last bit of bread on the sandwich kind of thing?
Spot on. And I think that we have become, the foster carer community, foster care, has become the poor relation of children's care in recent years. I was talking to Mark Owens, I think he's one of your guests recently, and saying to him, because he did the last care review before this one with Sir Martin Neri, and I just said I found it really disheartening that I don't think one single recommendation was followed through. And I think that we've become a very forgotten, I don't know where we sit anymore, and foster care has kind of lost its identity, and there's a massive chasm between what it really is and what the industry say it is. And I think that the industry have lost their way a little and are sort of flailing around the wind and don't quite know how to recruit anymore, don't know, you know, social landscape and financial landscape we live in, and with the young people coming through, they want a different thing these days. So that's another whole discussion. But 54%, I think you're absolutely right, Scott. It's tipping people over the top because, you know, foster carers are not feeling heard. The on the full report that we have, there were 500 or 600 comments in the "Do you want to make a comment?" you know, section, and they were heartbreaking. I was literally in tears going through it. Actually, at one point, I thought, I've been campaigning for foster care 12 years. I frankly need to resign. You know, I thought, well, I just couldn't see that I'd done very much. I can now and I can move on from that. But I felt so low when we got that report and then started dissecting it.
I mean, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, Al and I's kind of dabblings in foster care isn't quite as long as some. But do you think that this could have a negative impact on recruitment even more? The fact that, you know, people, if current carers are feeling undervalued, and certainly, you know, I read somewhere in the executive summary about foster carers actually boosting. So they have another income, but actually putting their own money into fostering, you know. Do you think that could have an impact on, well, I think we know the answer to the question, but how do you think that's going to have an impact on recruitment?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think it the big thing everyone's missing is, who do you think the best recruiters of foster carers are? Mm. It's other foster carers. Traditionally, we have been the best recruiters, and nobody's recommending it anymore. You know, just a few lone voices. It's interesting seeing the DfE in my own right last week, because up until now, of course, anybody who's had meetings with the DfE in fostering has traditionally been the organisations that speak on our behalf. And, you know, they will take to the DfE the carers they choose to take. And that may be a carer that's quite happy with their lot at that time. Or they find that a certain system that one of the organisations are promoting really works for them. Mm. I, over the years, I've spoken to thousands and thousands of carers up and down the UK, travelled around the UK, Scotland, Wales, you know, everywhere. And I speak to the people that come up to me and say, well, don't say anything to anyone else, but this is what I want to say. So I see, I have a really unique perspective on the foster care community. I don't claim to represent them or speak for them. What I do is I act as a sort of leader in my sector, reflecting back what I've heard, and, you know, reporting back what I've heard. I'm really pleased that the Department for Education, they invited, I went up on Wednesday as an advisor, I'm not affiliated to, but an advisor to the National Union for Foster Carers. And then on Thursday, I was invited up to speak to them about FosterWiki. And it was a really fantastic opportunity to speak about, you know, to actually get in there as a foster carer in our own right. You know, at the top of the table, as opposed to just in the waiting in the foyer to shake hands and add comments.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of reflective of the whole community, whether it's kinship or adoption, fostering, that generally it's kind of the representation is from the larger kind of member organization, shall we say, rather than kind of independence. And I think when we spoke to Will Quince, you know, the one before, the one before, the one before.
Yes.
I can't remember how long ago that was. Was that this year? I think it was this year. Yeah, when we spoke to him, you know, we did say to him about kind of the independence of representation, because actually you're not going to get the kind of cross-section that you need from using larger agencies. And, you know, it's not, I'm not criticising those agencies, but, you know, there's a selective in what they're sharing, in what's important to individuals isn't necessarily what's important
to
everybody.
Well, absolutely. And that the point is that we're, you know, everyone's human and we all have an agenda. It, you know, you can't help but have an agenda. I would say with kinship and adoption, it seems that adopters and kinship carers are more to the fore now in representing themselves. I would say that the organisations that represent us aren't foster carers. Mm. You know, nobody at the Fostering Network is a foster, nobody at Foster Talk is a foster carer. I've always struggled with that. And, you know, up until now, it's great now. I've now got those seats at the top tables at last, but it's taken 12 years. And, you know, a bit of sort of, you had to kind of disrupt an industry on the way to actually get there eventually, because I've been a bit of a pariah in the past. I've bought ideas of, you know, carers having their own licenses and, you know, being recognised for the actual status we are, which is actually, if you read HMRC, we come under the worker category, not self-employed. So it's just a misclassification that I wanted rectified. But honestly, you would think I was out to shoot everybody's granny. You know, I've been quite the pariah in the past.
That's one name we've heard for you. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, we're slightly off track, but I think the whole issue of representation is really, really fascinating. And I think that I think we've even discovered that in adoption, because it's a fair parallel to say that Scott and I have kind of created our own space away from the big charities, you know, through the podcast. And it's interesting that when you actually get through the gatekeepers, the people are whether that be ministers or, you know, civil servants, they want to hear the stories. Yeah. And so there's these people curating the narratives around foster care or adoption or kinship that just is untenable. It's a really scary sort of position, isn't it?
Well, it just won't fix things. So you take, let's get back, as you say, with the cost of living crisis. it is, you know, it has, it is a trigger, really. It is the straw that's breaking the camel's back, because people have actually, you know, come to the end of what they can cope with. The support is lacking. The social workers are now changing regularly. The support's lacking. So, and, you know, decisions made around the children, it just seems a bit like the Wild West out there at the moment, if you're a foster carer.
Is that the Wiki Wiki Wild Wild West?
Yeah. Oh, boom! That's it. Finish.
Mic drop. So interesting you bring that up, Sarah, because obviously fostering is all about children. So what do you think the impacts are going to be? I mean, we could guess, but, you know, terms of some of the feedback that you had from the survey and some of the questions you asked, what do you think the impact on children is going to be as a result of this?
I don't know how to say this, but no foster care is no foster care. But nobody seems to be taking it seriously. I think they're a bit like, they're having a bit of a tough time, they'll be fine. I mean, I went to the DfE last week to take this exact issue, but of course, the day before, Theresa May had announced that she was going to cap the electric and the energy bills.
Liz Truss.
Oh, who did I say?
You said Theresa May.
Oh my God.
Things are moving fast.
We've rewound. We've gone back in time.
I've been watching government lately.
Oh, bless you.
Anyway.
Sarah, can I just ask, you know we've got a king now, don't you?
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry, I shouldn't take the mic.
Moving on swiftly. Please trust.
Well, at time of recording. By the time
more political
this goes out,
back to the So Liz Truss have just announced her new package to help everybody. Now we've got a brand new head of fostering in the Department for Education, and I have to say I'm delighted, because he seems to be inviting a lot of people and hearing, he really getting up to speed from people, from, you know, including me and the union and stuff. But his immediate reaction, of course. I found generally, not just the head of fostering at the DfE, but generally politicians and ministers have no clue about what fostering is. They think it's what I coined the phrase a few years ago, the orphan Annie syndrome, where little orphan Annie turns up on your doorstep with her ringlets and a little suitcase, and you're lived happily ever after because you've given her a cup of tea and a cuddle. You know, and it is that, and that we're all saints and angels and superheroes, you know, doing an incredible job, and it's all a bit voluntary and altruistic, and we're all just happy families. That is the narrative that still pervades amongst those that don't know about fostering. So we've got a new gentleman in, and he's great. He's really listening to everybody, but he needs to come up to speed on what fostering actually is. And because they've got that narrative, his remark was, when we said foster carers are really suffering, the money is not even covering, because what happens is, as well, you get the standard response always. Yeah. And I built these responses into both I've sent out a campaign recently and the report right up the beginning, saying the government will say that no foster carer should be out of pocket due to fostering. And in April, we raised the fostering allowances to accommodate, you know, cover new costs. And I said right at the beginning of this report, the government will say this, and it is evidently not true. If you read this report, carers are out of pocket, and only 5% of them even got the raise passed on to them. And it's £10 a month in comparison to bills going up 500. So that's always the response. And we've sent out some MPs letters via hundreds of carers, have been sending them to the MPs, and they all get the copy and paste answer back, which is sad. You'd think they could get a personalised paragraph, but it's always the same thing. And basically, if we don't change that narrative and help them change that narrative, so we get this kind of answer. So go to the DfE, I explained that everybody's really suffering, and the answer was, oh, yes, it's impacting on all the families around the UK. it's dreadful, isn't it? So we immediately got put in with every other normal family around the UK, as though we, you know, as though the children were ours, were we, you know, were we charitable, were we volunteers, but we're all suffering the same. And actually, that's not how it is. Foster carers look after a corporate child, and that corporate child, the costs of the corporate child to live in that house, to live under that roof, to be paid, you know, have the heating paid for anything, it should be covered by the council. This is not for foster carers to be putting their hands in their own pockets. You've got to remember as well, 40% of carers, many of them single, don't have other jobs. And I say other jobs because fostering is a job. It doesn't mean we don't love and nurture children, but it is a job as well. And I don't really I think the government and the MPs and the ministers think that we're all out of work doing proper jobs and just do a bit of fostering on the side. But you know, with the level of trauma our children needs from babies through to teenagers, very often that is your only job. So it's very difficult to explain to a new minister that, or a new person at the DfE, what the difference is.
Do you think there was ever a time where the, I don't know what's called, allowance? The standard allowance that you'd get from the authority. Was there ever a time, do you think, that actually ever covered the cost of being a foster care?
Really good question. I think it may have done years ago. I think the thing that fostering's not catching up with is how much the social landscape has changed, the financial landscape, and also people's desire to do something meaningful, which has catches several different aspects. Meaningful can mean, yes, I want to love and nurture a child. I want to improve the outcomes. I also want to think of a career. I also want to be educated. You know, young people coming up through the ranks now won't be satisfied with putting a penny on and sitting at home, you know, fostering 150 children. You know, they want more out of life. And I think we're missing a trick there.
It does feel like that we're constantly playing catch up with what the perception of fostering and the actually lived reality. And I was just wondering about what conversations the people who've completed the survey, what have they said as being had with their, whether that be a local authority, be that an independent foster care agency, are they having those conversations around money? And what are the local authorities saying?
You see, I see a very dark side of all of this, and I'm probably one of the only people that people will come to me. They'll know I'll keep things anonymous and quiet, but the majority of carers are too frightened to say anything about money. They bring up money, you're either money grabbing or you've not got your priorities in the right place. There are so many excuses to stop a foster carer saying they need more money. Or, you know, what the other answer was, I've had several of these, was, you know what you were getting into. You know, if you couldn't afford it, you shouldn't have done it. And that's shocking responses, because at the end of the day, people will just leave. It won't be that they'll put up and shut up. Some people are physically, I mean, not physically, but they financially simply are not going to be able to afford it. Plus also, you've got to realise we can't take children out of poverty to put them back in it. Yeah. And if children are being, you know, in homes where they're cold, they report they're cold, or they've had to put another jumper on, or they're not getting the food that they wanted to have, or they found out they're, so, you know, 2.5%, any percent of this is not okay. 2.5%, and Foster Talks found 3% of carers are using food banks.
Which blows your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it does blow your mind. And the pleadings in these remarks and comments, I couldn't send them all to the DfE. No one would ever read them all. But the pleadings and the please, please help was written probably 100, 200 times. Please, please help. And I was like, how bad does it have to go before we start looking at fostering seriously? I mean, is this bad enough? I don't know. Yeah. What has to be bad enough before we put fostering in the limelight as well and say, right, let's fix this.
Yeah. And of course, just thinking about what you said there about cold, kind of thinking about our children, and I read a lot about this in adoption. I don't know if it's the same in fostering, but certain age children, they wear naffal during the winter and complain that they're cold. The heating could be up full blast, blah, blah. I mean, this could have an impact on things like allegations that they're not being cared for properly, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's a bit of a minefield. I mean, you know, I guess thing to take into.
Well, there's the whole, I mean, we can open up allegations because you get an allegation of harm, which is sort of purposeful or willful or by act or omission. But you also get standards of care investigations, which is where carers are not necessarily. And this, the minute you sort of slip in a food bank, you're going, this is a standard of care.
Yeah.
Not a minimum standard.
Yeah. One carer wrote to me saying that she had to take a little boy to the food bank as well. And she kept walking around saying, oh, do you like being an Aldi? This is Aldi's. Isn't this lovely? Do you like being in Aldi's? Okay. Yeah. And she said she could not possibly, that was one of the comments we had, she could not possibly go and say that she was needing to use a food bank because she'd get an allegation or standards of care against her. Now, that little boy has been with her 5 years since he was born. He got lots of special needs and he's been, you know, his family, he hasn't got any other family, that little boy. And, you know, the impact on that child being taken away suddenly, because the other thing is social services, they've got a responsibility to make sure that the national minimum standards are being adhered to, and that won't tick that box for them. Yeah. But then that could imagine the trauma that I'd had to a child leaving. That lady was on £120 a week.
Is that allowance and reward?
All in.
I mean, that's
there are some appalling. Staggering figures around the country that you don't know about. Staggering numbers. A lot don't meet the national minimum standards for the national minimum allowances. A majority do, but some don't. But there's also this postcode lottery as well. Cost of living is a postcode lottery with foster carers. Down in Hampshire, who I work for, I got very well paid as a level 3 foster carer. You know, and I might point that out as well. I campaign for carers, but it's not from any grudge of mine, because Hampshire have been superb to work for. But the disparity between my pay and somebody, you know, up north or Wales or something like that is staggering. And why is that? But, you know, it's not because I don't disagree that there should perhaps be different skills fees when you do more education and you're more experienced. But certainly the basic, you know, allowances should be the same. And why this terrible as well, people really a lot of carers like to work for local authorities, and a lot of carers work for local authorities because very often you get some of the younger children, not always. But local authorities, you know, pay this entry level, which is just the child's allowance alone. And how, if you've got a baby, for instance, how can you go to work?
Well,
got a baby straight out of hospital, how can you go to work? You can't, can you? And you can't put them with a childminder, and you can't do any other work. So people have to be enabled, let's use that word, enabled to foster. Plus also there's this kind of other thing as well, where they say, no carer should be out of pocket from fostering. That's a very low bar for people that do an extremely difficult, challenging, you know, some are experienced, some have got a high level of skills and training. You know, it's a very low bar to just say, as long as you're not out of pocket, you're all right.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, but it's not just about financial out of pocket, is it? There's an emotional out of pocket if you're stressing about how you have to go to a food bank and if the child is going to say this out of the next thing. So
yeah. Allegations huge in this situation. And one person even said she tried to organise all her, it was another local authority, tried to organise all the local authority to get them together to all sort this problem out. And then she found she had a standards of care against her.
I mean,
I know it's hard listening, but it's just no. This is what you know. It does happen, unfortunately.
It feels like that this is an issue that the cost of living is exacerbating what is already there. It's not like there's very few new generation of new issues. All it's done is it's the cracks are widening to the point of breaking point. And there's a whole raft of things there that you know you were talking about. One is, I think, that even this notion that foster care remains a purely altruistic task, because it's just not. Some people like you say, it's a legitimate career for very vulnerable children. Yeah. But then just seeing that people come into fostering for good reasons. No one, you know, I probably said in the last one, you know, I say to people, you know, it's a terrible way of earning a living. But we understand that, but people earn their living this way. But people come to it and they don't, you know, if you lived on the border of a local authority, you would just go to your nearest one. Very few people know that they can even go to Barnardo's or, you know, this authority, that authority. And so people are just, because they're maybe naive. Is there naivety in foster
care? Well, that's why we put so much on FosterWiki now about we've got a page called So You Want to Foster. And then there's top tips if you want to foster. So it goes through everything and it shows you that you can work for a local authority, you can work for an agency. FosterWiki stays very neutral on all of these things. And we work in our thing for the fostering, for the good of the children, for the good of foster carers, you know. So they get all the information. If anyone wants to foster, go to FosterWiki and see So You Want to Foster, because it gives you the absolute lowdown on, you know, the right questions to ask, whether you want to work with a local authority or private agency, what, you know, what would suit you better. And all of this is made up by people who have actually experienced this and been through the process themselves. But they do tend to just go to their nearest local authority. And because actually, although having said that, when you Google, I want to foster or whatever in my area, the private agency will very often come up nearer the top. But people go to fostering on a myriad of different routes, Google, friends, word of mouth, things like that. But you're absolutely right. It has exacerbated a situation that already existed. We need to rip it up and start again to a certain extent, because the disparity between ministers, government and the top of, you know, DCSs and everything and what really happens on the ground level is huge. And we need to bring those closer together. We need to sort out the sort of them and us. We need to, there's so much that we need to do. If we don't have foster care, we always will need foster care. The recent care review focused rightly on keeping families together and kinship and social work and the delivery of that. There was very, very little in there about foster care other than, please, can we have millions of pounds for recruitment? Well, if you're going to do the same recruitment, again, in my view, you're throwing good money after bad. Because it isn't working anymore.
Yeah, you're dooming people who are going to come into the workforce and leave either at the front door and go, oh, this is rubbish, this doesn't work, or people who will join and then be burnt out within a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever.
30% plus of brand new carers are gone in 12 to 24 months. I mean, that's a terrible statistic, isn't it? And it's because I truly believe it's because they're not getting the right education. They are not given the full... People are so scared to give them the full extent of their role and what it really means and what you're really going to be doing. And they think they put people off. And actually, quite the reverse is true. It just enables them to be more prepared and to... If you've got a really good grounding and all the things you need to become a foster carer, then you can concentrate on the job. Then you can, you know, loving and nurturing a child comes because you've learnt to be trauma informed and you've learnt how to deliver therapeutic care. Then you start to form a relationship with the child and then love grows and develops. Children don't walk into your house. Well, I'm sure sometimes maybe with little ones and everything, but in my experience, like we specialise in teenagers and they don't walk into my house and they can, what can I say? Yeah. There can be a lot of chaos going on. There can be a lot of trauma-led behaviour There can be a lot of things that keep you awake at night. You don't just sit there and go, I'm so in love with this child. You know, it's part of our family immediately. They just, it isn't like that for the majority of foster children. And, you know, we have to remember these children have their own parents as well. It, so little is done to train carers, brand new carers. And also, we find so many brand new carers fall into traps, allegation traps that they needn't have. What did I have last week?
Well, no,
she'd phoned the police in the middle of the night and told them to remove the child because she was disrespecting her. And I said, well, you know, the national minimum standards. And she said, what's that?
Hmm.
It's a local authority carer, had no idea what a national minimum standard was or that her role was underpinned by statutory legislation. It was just the child was plonked with information withheld. The child was left. It's because it's born out of desperation. I understand it. The local authorities are desperate to place and very short places. The child hadn't been given the information about the child, and they were told they'd been fostering for 2 months. They had a mother and baby in as well, no training. They were told to just parent the child. It's not your job to think.
I mean, it's pretty shoddy. It is shoddy, and you do hear those cases. Can I sort of move? I mean, I think it's worth noting as well, the podcast we put out last year, we did work with, I think, Catherine Lockett from the National Association of Fostering Providers. We did an episode on allegations, and by a third, it's the most ever listened to podcast. People are accessing it on a daily basis because it's such a pressing issue. But I was going to ask you, obviously the Care Review came out in, well, back when we were young and happy in June. And there was foster care featured quite strongly in there, not so much about the actual practice of foster care, but there was issues around, you know, talking about cooperatives and local authorities working together.
Yeah.
Do you have any reflections on that? Have we taken you off the cost of living, but
I think the regional care cooperatives will be, it's one of those things that hard to know whether they're going to work until they're going, you know, they're doing, as it were. I see the value in them. I certainly do, because I do honestly believe that fostering is far too devolved, and it's there's no standardized consistency across the country at all. It's an absolute lucky dip and a postcode lottery as to support, training, you know, help. And I would like to say as well, there's a lot of fantastic fostering that goes on, and there's some great relationships between social workers and foster carers. There is, and it's easy to pinpoint the horror stories, but there's a lot of great stuff that goes on as well. I mean, I've worked for Hampshire for 12 years, and, you know, had two supervising social workers. Both have been fantastic. So, and I've had a great relationship. But I had a great deal of training before I came into fostering that I think set me up really well for the role. But there is some great work that goes on. But this lack of cohesion, standardisation, and for me as well, that means it's a postcode lottery as to the standard of care a child gets.
Yeah.
You know, because a foster carer needs to be educated and supported in their role and not live in a climate of fear.
I mean, looking across the whole sector, I find it interesting that when you look at the service that local authorities provide, because they can be failing, they can be doing terribly, and there's no sanctions, or there's limited, you know, there's no immediate sanctions versus independence. If it, you know, that you can fail as a local authority, and what's going to happen? Your foster carer is still, people still ring you up and say, can I foster? And then versus the independent sector, and that complicated mix remains. Obviously, I work in the independent sector, so I've got a particular view on that. But it just seems like this isn't getting better. Are you optimistic for the future?
I think, well, I'll just take you back to what you said. It's absolutely spot on there. And I think the word's accountability. I was speaking to the DfE about them last week. Especially local authorities, and there's no accountability to anyone. I say yes, Ofsted, I guess, but nobody seems to get, if they, you know, nobody seems to be challenging them when they fail enough, or or they know, don't seem to be any special. I mean, you can't really go anywhere to complain as a foster carer. You daren't complain in-house or you will have an allegation against you. It's the biggest trigger of allegations, whistleblowing or complaints. And you daren't, you know, really mention that. So in order to, so am I optimistic? I think that I'm really optimistic since last week and having these meetings and meeting the DfE and the new team, just in the sense that there is seems to be an appetite to listen to everybody, all the voices, which I think is really, really important. And I think that FosterWIC is obviously taken off and there is an appetite for foster carers and others in interest to independently access information and showing you how things really work. So I'm optimistic that we can start to change the narrative. I think we have a bit. We are changing the narrative a bit. I think that things have got so bad now that people are starting to look elsewhere to see where and who can start to change things. I do believe that the industry has been in an echo chamber, and I think that the echo chamber has got us to this point. But I think also there is a point where people get paralysed in these systems because, A, you don't know really where to start to fix it, and, B, everybody's done it this way for so long, they're not sure how to change. And, you know, the subject, it always reminds me of when the press rang me up. I spoke to ITV last week and BBC. They ring up wanting to know about the cost of living crisis. But like this conversation now, there's so many tentacles to foster care. You can't really pin it down. We've started on the cost of living and we've gone, you know, we've even spoken about Theresa May.
Speak for yourself there.
I mean, you could have a podcast dedicated solely to fostering and you could do 3 episodes a week and you'd never feel like you've got to the bottom of that well.
No.
You know, I do a lot of work around parent and child fostering. And that is just, it's almost non-comparable. You know, it's something else. It's oil and water compared to fostering a baby or a 3-month-old. I'm aware we've taken up a lot of your time, and I have to apologise for the banging and barking sound. It's my chimney sweep who's having at my chimney, who is also a social worker, which is a very odd combination. The eternal question, is he a social worker who's a chimney sweep, or is he a chimney sweep who does social work? Perhaps we'll never know. But I just was thinking, you know, final comments. Do you think that we're going to be able to address the cost of living, or is it just going to be another fudge and we'll just ride it out?
I can't see. Well, we're in the middle of trying to campaign to get extra payments for foster carers, but then at the same time, then the announcement came from the Prime Minister that we were Prime Minister, so that
the current Prime Minister,
Prime Minister,
whoever at
that. So it's a wait and see game. However, what I think we've done is triggered the conversation that things need to change. We had conversations with the DfE about allegations last week. I note that Foster Talk and Fostering Network, allegations control the fostering sector. That's why they live in fear. And we've spoken in depth about long-term goals, short-term goals, and about, you know, do we rip it up and start again, and how do we do it? Not an easy question to that, but I am confident now that these conversations have started, and I'm confident now that they're beginning to understand that we do need to put foster care center stage for a while so we can have a really good look at it and see what we need to do to fix it. At the end of the day, we will always need foster carers. There are all those other important things, kinship, keeping children in their homes, adoption, super important. Residential also has a very important part to play, but that's just it. It's all part of a big, very, very large jigsaw, if you like, and we can't let one area of it go get this bad, which we have. Are they saying that? I'll leave you with a scary figure. I think Social Market Foundation said that we need 26,000 more foster carers by 2025, their research showed, and we are we are not even recruiting 9,000, which has been the figure since I started, and people are resigning. We've got a very aging foster care population as well.
And we need the right carers as well, don't we? We need the right carers as well, because this is the other thing.
We need the right carers. And I'll tell you what as well, and it's something for another day, perhaps. It's something, the big project I'm working on at the moment, education.
Yeah.
Education, a standardized education is absolutely key for my mind, for the carers and the children.
Wow.
Well, so thank you for coming on again. It has been a pleasure. Like we said, we could talk hours, but I think we'd need more refreshments to talk for hours, because I think that we'll never get down to the bottom of it. But I think it's a really important thing that you've done in terms of the cost of living crisis. And again, we're going to have to wait a couple of weeks to see if anybody's going to pick it up after this period of mourning, shall we call it, until the politicians get back to work. But thank you in the meantime for coming in
to talk to us.
And we will hopefully speak to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you,
lovely. So I look forward to it.
Thank you, Sarah.
We'll pop all the links in the doodah as well. So don't worry, people can find out.
You can find out all about it from the show notes.
Excellent. So bon jovi.
Anchovy.
Bye.
'Sunny Delight' conference.
Blimey, that takes me back.
Doesn't it? Okay, right, I'm going to start. Well, hello and welcome to the ANDF Well, hello and welcome to the...
Oh, my God. The ANDF podcast. Podcast.
There's no need to be snarky.
Oh, I just wish I had my hands on these outtakes to put them on, because if it was me, that would be on the outtakes. For Al, it'll be cut, deleted, gone.
My public have a reputation to uphold.